It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out! It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, a podcast where there are so many things to talk about. I am the head guy at The Good Fight, Justin Clue, and with me is Yahoo Sports' own Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz.
Hello. Hello.
Liz, the Phillies are making trades. Baseball is thinking about changing some rules. Lenny Dykstra is terrorizing a small suburban neighborhood. I mean, this is the off-season we had hoped for, isn't it?
All crammed into literally 24 hours.
I mean, this is this is what we dreamed about, and it feels like I can't remember a time before this now. If you told me I'd spent the entire off season complaining about nothing happening, I would need to see your receipts. I frankly would need the proof. Not that we have hours and hours of audio recordings of me doing just that to serve as that proof, but I would need it. I would need to hear it because there's been some stuff going down on the Philadelphia sports front. Even in just the last 24 hours, there's been bursts of sound followed by just utter silence, followed by the trade
sound for of people screaming.
Yeah, by the sound. We got a lot of feelings in Philadelphia, and boy, they all came out. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about on this episode of Continued Success, a part of the Good Fight podcast family. Subscribe, download, and leave comments on all of our podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hidden Season, which you got an emergency episode of with John Stolness last night. You also get The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk, a new episode of which also debuted this week. We do bi-weekly episodes that premiere on Tuesdays. And our latest episode is on a game from 1989 in which Bruce Ruffin was utterly decimated by the New York Mets. And those are always a lot of fun. And before we go any further, I do want to throw some praise on somebody we should mention in every episode, but do not. But that's Payne Prophet, who is responsible for the artwork that you see on all of our podcast images as they pop up in your feed. And Payne does tremendous work, and he's a tremendous person. And I just wanted to give him a salute while we record this episode.
Yes, he's very talented, and he does sell some of his work. Some of it has ended up on T-shirts. He was nice enough last year to send me a handful of postcards with his baseball art on it. And so at some point, either Justin and I will tweet out his handle and some of his information where you can buy his awesome stuff, because you should do that. He is great.
Yes. That's exactly why I wanted to be sure to mention him. And yeah, his website is just paineprofit.com. That's paineprofit.com. Now, on to the baseball, which is, of course, Liz, that yesterday the Philadelphia Phillies made a trade with the Miami Marlins for catcher JT Realmuto. In exchange, they sent to Miami Jorge Alfaro. They sent prospects Sixto Sanchez and, oh my God, I forget the other one's name. Will.
It's like Will something. Will Simmons?
I am so sorry, know. Will.
Whoever you are, I remember thinking, wow, what an all-American name.
Oh boy. Will Stewart. Sorry. He's been compared to a young Chris Sale. And we know how those early career comparisons always work out. But no, best of luck.
That came from a tweet from Jason Stark and every prospect guy we know. We could hear them rolling their eyes through the computer.
But we do, you know, best of luck to all three of those players. It's obviously the loss of those players that became such a topic of debate yesterday. First off, I guess we'll start with this side of the trade. First, obviously, the player we know the best in this trade is Jorge Alfaro, and that's somebody that I think that people didn't want to see go because in an age where the Phillies are acquiring players that are established, productive, or in some cases the best at their position to fill out their roster rather than wait for younger guys they already had on their roster to develop into those types of players. The catching position seemed like one where maybe they wouldn't do that. Maybe we were actually going to see this prospect come up with like a lot of great raw talent and actually develop into one of the hopefully premier players at that position. You know, you had no guarantees of that, but Alfaro came up. He was acquired in the Cole Hamels trade with the Rangers. And we can throw the ball 102 miles an hour. He loved throwing to first base to try catch guys sleeping. And he could hit the ball. When he hit the ball, he could hit it well over a country mile. So there were a lot of things to like about Jorge Alfaro and a lot of reasons to root for his success. And it seemed like we had a future starting catcher waiting in the wings, and not anymore. Now he is with the Miami Marlins. So he'll very likely be on their opening day roster. And Liz, I mean, I know that there's we can talk about what might have been with Alfaro on a just statistical output front. But I think that largely had a lot of the disappointment you saw yesterday was because people just were expecting him to be around. Obviously, JT Realmuto is a huge improvement. You're going from one of the lowest performing teams at the catching position to the top team at the catching position. So I feel like people expected to see him develop, and they liked that story, and they wanted to see his tools turn into more productive versions of themselves. So I think some of the gut punch you saw yesterday when this trade went down and that Alfaro was going to be included in it was that. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
I would. I think that's probably my issue with this, because I'm not a prospect hugger. I like Sixto Sanchez a lot. He had some injuries. You know, pitchers are just like a roll of the dice to me until they actually make it to the majors, until they're good enough to make it to the majors. But like, this is the second trade of the offseason where the Phillies have traded a young player that they kept down for an extra long time and only gave them a short time in the majors to show anything. I mean, granted, they got a big player for Alfaro and, you know, Sixto Sanchez. But, you know, I think of J.P. Crawford. He had an abbreviated year. He was injured. He could have been up sooner, possibly. But they traded him. It was even truer for Alfaro. Alfaro, they had no choice but to bring him up because he was out of options, I think, or something like that. Because he'd been up and down a few times. But Alfaro, you know, I think he could have been up the previous year when we were struggling with Cameron Rupp. You know, I think having Alfaro up then could have been a great start for his development. Maybe we could have. I say we could have avoided this. Like, I'm not unhappy. Like, it, you know, right after the trade, as it was going down, you know, you react on Twitter and it's anger. You know, it's astonishment. It's
to acquire the best catcher in all of baseball. There were a lot of really upset people out there yesterday.
I know. And I was one of them. And I'm glad I'm getting a chance now since I don't have a Phillies specific platform to write about this anymore. I'm glad I have the chance on the podcast to sort of clarify that, you know, I'm happy. It's going to be great having a good catcher. I just also don't know if, you know, I feel like it's an upgrade, sure, but is it worth what they gave up? I guess we'll eventually find out. You know, the position of catcher in Major League Baseball, and this is something I didn't talk about yesterday on Twitter, position of catcher in Major League Baseball is, it's not the best. There aren't a lot of good ones. And so if you have a great one, it's amazing. But if you don't, you are just like everybody else. So I like that the Phillies are trying to upgrade a position where there's like four dudes who can do it well. But I also don't know if it was worth it simply for that. Like, most of the teams they face are not going to have an ace catcher. But I guess, you know, they'll have better people at other positions while the Phillies don't? Question mark. When does the season start? Can we just start?
Well, I think part of it was, and this is what I'm no prospect hugger either. I'm not trying to outdo you here, Liz. I think I'm even less of a prospect hugger than you. It's always funny when we say we're not prospect huggers, it's because we're about to hug a prospect as tightly as we can. And that was happening a lot yesterday. But even I could see that, yeah, I'm not a prospect hugger, but Sixto Sanchez is the only prospect the Phillies had that other teams really would want in a trade like this, and that we were using him to get a catcher who, again, is the best in the league at his position. But when we already thought we were like set up at that position, even though, you know, We had no guarantee that we were. It just felt like, oh no, we have a guy. He's going to become a guy. Why are we giving up our top prospect for another guy? And when you look at the numbers, it's like, yeah, we did that because the upgrade was incredible. And I agree that. And I think seeing JT Realmuto play outside of Marlins Park and play more in Citizens Bank Park is going to be really thrilling. And the reason this trade was made will become very apparent very fast. But I think it was just the idea that this team had so much money, has not spent it where we assumed they'd have spent it by now, and is now spending assets instead of money. Whereas, you know, when you're spending money, it's just like, all right, it's nothing. This is just stuff we have plenty of that we're fortunate enough to have more so than a lot of other teams, and we can just use it to get players. But when you start trading people, that's when you're really gambling, because what if Sixto Sanchez, what if the nightmare is real and he becomes one of the best pitchers in the league? Again, this is a stretch because prospects are, you know, that has never happened really. Someone pointed out on Twitter yesterday, other than like Gio Gonzalez, there are very few occasions where the Phillies have traded away a young pitcher in this kind of situation, and that young pitcher has actually come back and really made them eat it. You know, so that doesn't concern me that much. It's just the idea of trading players away who could become really good players that you then have to regret losing, rather than just spending money, which, you know, money's not going to show up in your park wearing a different uniform and be like, hey, I'm good now. I'm good money. And you threw me away. So I think there was just some frustration that they were trading players, including their top prospect, whoever that would have been. And a promising young catcher for someone that no one had expected really to see on the Phillies this year. So I don't know. I mean, was that part of your frustration that the Phillies were trading players and not using money to acquire players? Because it was mentioned that, oh, this could be seen as further enticement to get Bryce Harper to sign here, which is very silly.
Further enticement. No, further enticement is bullshit. I mean, no one, neither Manny Machado or Bryce Harper are going anywhere because they signed someone else. These guys, the reason why they're continuing to hold out is because they believe they can make or break a team. They believe they're worth that much, and they are. You know, that's why they're still there. Signing, you know, Manny Machado's brother-in-law, White Sox, is not going to help you. Signing JT, you know, trading for JT Realmuto is not going to help Bryce Harper come to the Phillies. He believes that he's going to make a tremendous difference in whatever lineup he goes to, regardless of who's there. And that's true. So, I mean, it just feels like it's out of order. Like, I think of trades like this, and I think of the Hunter Pence trade that was made to shore up the outfield in 2011. And, you know, a trade that was made to upgrade a position that the Phillies were fine at, but could use more. And so you trade for, you know, for someone like that, and they join your team and they do great things. I mean, Realmuto is open to extension talks, which is good, because otherwise that is a hell of a lot to give up for 2 years. That's 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. That's actually a huge part of this, that he wasn't open to an extension in Miami, but now appears to be open to an extension now that he's out of Miami. And that's a big deal.
How much do he hate Miami?
How much do they all hate Miami? I think we're all hoping for a Christian Yelich kind of rebirth outside of Miami for JT Realmuto. I hope I hope we see something similar. I think a lot of people think we will.
I just feel bad. I mean, I guess we talked about this in the Slack yesterday, I think. You know, I feel bad that Alfaro now has to play for the Marlins, because I've been to that park and it's a great park, but it's better when there are people in it. And they're just not going to be people. There's no dinger machine, which is stupid. And I mean, I'm just annoyed. I feel bad that he has to go play there, a place where baseball probably should not be. I don't know. I wish that they had signed someone. How many signings have they had? They've signed one major player. No, I don't believe they've signed anyone for the bullpen. They've traded for Gene Segura and traded for JT Realmuto. They've made two significant trades and one signing.
Did you forget David Robertson?
They have all this. Did that happen? Yes, you're right.
I was doing the same thing in my head yesterday, and I forgot David Robertson. So I thought you might have forgot him too. And they got
I did
they got a couple of
You might have guessed. I did not.
They
check
got
my
a couple of
that.
Lefties in these trades as well. You remember they got they did get some pitching arms back, and I think that we were led to believe that they believe they're done with the bullpen. I think following the Robertson signing.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Like with Robertson, yeah, I guess like since I forgot that he existed, I thought, I guess they're going to have to go side Kimbrel, and I'm down with that. But no, it's all Robertson, so no Kimbrel for us, which is disappointing. As I've said, I think that the Kimbrel sort of bird lean could become a loving tribute for him instead sure. of a mocking thing.
I mean, as long as he's not the only guy trusted to go out there and get something done, then I'm okay with it. At this point, just like if they sign Bryce Harper, they could sign whoever they wanted after that, and it would just. To anyone listening, it would just be that, like, that's all you would be hearing anyway after a Bryce Harper signing. Like, yep, you did what? It doesn't matter. All right, great.
They have to go do it.
Right.
Now.
And that's, I guess, the other part of this, I guess we'll just move into, is that signing, trading for JT Realmuto. Well, let's start with this, because this is, I couldn't figure out a way to phrase this and not get screamed at yesterday. But, like, how, okay, so let's say at this point in time, the Phillies aren't done making deals this offseason and spring training, but they aren't going to get either Machado or Harper. I mean, how many more people could they sign right now? It's like, it would be a failure. I think just optics wise, it would be a failure to not sign either of those guys. We've been saying it for months, but how good of a team could this be moving forward? Assuming they can make any more moves they want, except sign Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, because I think Realmuto, I mean, that's a big step. So someone said he's their best position player now. Like, that's a big deal. And they've made a bunch of acquisitions. They've solidified shortstop. They've got a fourth outfielder. And, you know, I know it's cheesy, but like an off the field clubhouse leader in Andrew McCutchen, who that's a role they did not have last year when they lost Freddie Galvis and Andres Blanco. They needed some veteran leadership in there. And apparently nobody does that better than Andrew McCutchen. They've shored up their bullpen as best as they apparently chose to. Obviously, this isn't the best team right now, but as it stands right now, this team could contend in the NL East. Am I wrong to think that?
I mean, I think they'd be a third place team. Even with Realmuto, I look at the Nationals and the Mets, and I don't know if they're better.
Right.
I look at the Braves. They're definitely not better than the Braves. So where does that leave them? They're fighting it out with the Mets for third place. Maybe
is that
maybe,
not good enough?
No, it's not.
I agree. It's not.
Fucking sign. I'm this signing, like, as happy as I theoretically am and will be once the season starts. Like, you said it yesterday. This is a move that some people are saying, well, now they have to sign Harper. And I think your position was, do they? Because this feels like a we're done now move. This feels like a, we're going to make up for the fact that we're just not going to spend that money move. So, I mean, and if anyone says, well, they're going to wait till next year, I will find them and beat them with wooden spoons, because that's so stupid. They have a chance to make everything better right now. Without Bryce Harper, they cannot and will not be better than the Braves. And when you can say whatever you want about the Nationals, but the Braves are the team to beat. They made their lineup better this offseason with just a couple of moves, and they were already pretty good. So they, Realmuto is not all it takes to beat the Braves, and they have to do it. I don't know who else is out there they could sign that is not Bryce Harper, but they have to do it. They have to sign Bryce Harper. They just have to. I don't care. Do it.
The thing about the way the situation is right now and the way that the Phillies are and have successfully been pretty much airtight communications wise all off season long is that anybody really has evidence for anything right now. So yesterday when I presented the idea that, because it was Ken Rosenthal who tweeted signing or trading for JT Realmuto could be more enticement for someone like Bryce Harper to come to Philadelphia. And I said, on the other side of that, it might be because they don't think they can sign Bryce Harper, which would be crazy. And in either case, you could make the argument that that's what's happening. And people did. People said it definitely meant one thing and it definitely meant the other thing. And yeah, at this point, though, yeah, I think without the Bryce Harper signing, this is this a move like this becomes even more questionable. Just like, okay, but then why? Again, back to the assets versus money thing. Why did we trade our young catcher and top prospect for this guy when it didn't make us contenders? And well, I guess that's assuming that they don't make any more moves, because when I say they could continue making more moves, just not sign Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, and they could still theoretically contend in the East. And in my mind, that means like they could throw themselves in the mix and then by the grace of God, by the bad hop of one ground ball, fall ass backwards into the playoffs. I think they're at a position where they could do that. I mean, hell, they were in a position to do that last year. But who else is out there that that they could sign other than Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, who could continue this trend of making the team better without signing one of the two guys that everyone wants to see come here? Because I mentioned in the Slack yesterday, I didn't mention this, I just kind of laid out what the Phillies starting nine could look like position by position yesterday. And then Buster Olney pretty much did the same thing on Twitter. And, you know, it's a lot of recognizable names all in a row. It's a lot of different names all in a row. Like, I think the Phillies might be the most different looking team compared to last year that's on the field by the fact that there's other people. There's so many new people on the team, but also so many new recognizable faces on the team. It's not like they've swapped out prospects for prospects or given a guy who never got a chance with another organization his shot at a starting job. These are like some of the best players or former best players at positions who are now wearing Phillies uniforms. And I think they might be one of the most different looking teams in baseball. But I mean, are we talking like, all right, the Phillies know they're not going to sign Bryce Harper. Let's say, are they going to go out and sign Mike Moustakas? Are they going to go out and sign, Adam Jones? Like, are there further moves they could make without signing one of,
I'm sorry, Gonzalez. Carlos Gomez is also available, but Carlos Gonzalez is the one that
Like, are there people other than Bryce Harper and Manny Machado they could sign right now and just continue improving the team and have it be good enough? Probably not, right?
Marwin Gonzalez, maybe. But they have a shortstop. And, you know, like I'm looking at the list of, you know, available players. Like, you're at Mike Moustakas and the guys that I just mentioned. Everyone else has been signed besides Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. And so, like, this is it. The next move they have to make is that. And do it soon. Like, people are waiting. No one's blinking. Whatever. Just, like, I'm trying to, like, we have no idea what anyone's offered. And I was trying to figure out how much more money it's going to take over the life of a contract to get him to sign. Like, what aren't they offering? Is it another $30 million over 5, 10? Like, what is it? Just do it. I'm so tired of waiting. I'm so this has gotten me to the point where now it's incredibly obvious that they're not doing it, that they haven't done it yet. And that everyone,
I'm at the point where I forget that they could do it. Like, I just get up in the morning and someone mentioned it the other day and I was like, you know, I haven't thought about that in like a day and a half. That's wild. That just, like, it's just not going to happen. It's, you know, something on this front is inevitable, but it just stopped feeling that way because it just hasn't happened for so long.
I mean, if Matt Klentak was looking for what the fans can do and feel when a new and exciting player comes into the mix, he hasn't felt it yet, because McCutchen is exciting and new, but he is not Bryce Harper. You know, David Robertson, I forgot about him, so that doesn't even count. JT Realmuto involved giving up a catcher who, well, is not at the beloved level yet, has a lot of people, including me, who love him dearly and thought he had a lot of potential. And so this was it's bittersweet in a way. I mean, it's exciting and cool to have the best, you know, one of the best catchers in baseball on the team, but, you know, it's not, you had to give up players to get him. Just if you sign Bryce Harper, he'll fully understand how happy we can all be. So he should just do that right now.
I agree that it's got to go down. Let's move on to the other part of what Phillies gave up. We talked about Alfaro and what a promising young catcher, and seeing him depart sort of prematurely. I mean, it's comparable to when J.P. Crawford got traded to Seattle and the Phillies got Gene Segura. It's like, yeah, we got this great shortstop. in exchange for a former top prospect, somebody we hoped would become the player we are now acquiring. The Phillies are just skipping those middle four steps, you know, those couple of years where they would have had to figure out how to develop him in a crowded infield and with all the backwards ways that they've kind of handled some of their top prospects over the years, playing time wise. But instead, now we have Gene Segura, who is a very good shortstop who can hit the extra base hits the Phillies weren't able to hit last year. And I think that's kind of what the idea was with trading Alfaro. It's like, yeah, we could wait and see if this guy's pans out, or we could get the best player at his position in exchange for him and two other prospects, one of which was the Phillies' top prospect, Sixto Sanchez. And if you're looking at the right analysis, the Phillies traded yesterday Jorge Alfaro. They also traded a young Pedro Martinez and a young Chris Sale to the Marlins in exchange for JT Realmuto, if the comparisons are to be believed, because the Pedro Martinez is who Sixto Sanchez had been compared to in the early parts of his career. He's 20 years old. He's a right-hander. He pitched 46 and two-thirds innings last year because of some right elbow inflammation. He was limited. The Marlins were apparently fine with the issue. They didn't feel like it was significant enough to hold back. He wound up going 4-3 with a 2.88 ERA, and then he was shut down for the year. MLB Pipeline put Sanchez in at number 27 in their pipeline rankings. You know, this was the Phillies guy. They don't really have any other prospect. And I think if you're just looking at it broadly enough in terms, even if you're somebody who just looks at prospects in terms of are they tradable, this Sixto Sanchez was the Phillies only guy who was in that upper tier of he's who you're going to have to include for a trade for somebody like Realmuto or Mike Trout or like anybody high profile who they would have had to that they would have wanted to acquire via trade. So using him is kind of like, I don't know if there's anybody else you could really, if there's someone else you need to acquire via trade, you're probably not going to be able to get them because Sixto's gone. And on top of that, yeah. I will say if you're someone like Liz and like me, who has learned since the Hunter Pence trade that prospects are, you know, trading prospects for major league ready talent or major league best talent, always in the short term, at least, can appear to be a good move. And it's, you know, you shouldn't hold on to prospects because, you know, as we've learned many times, they'll break your heart. But when the Phillies trade prospects, do yourself a favor and go to Matt Winkleman's Twitter feed and just watch him like say goodbye to each individual prospect, because he gives you the insight that you don't have on these prospects, even the ones who like that you're way less familiar with, like Will Stewart, somebody who you're like, oh, he says like, oh, I watched this guy, or, you know, I'd been watching this guy, or he had this talent, or I always thought he would develop into this. He's somebody who's going to be way more familiar with these guys than you are. And that's part of why it's easier to trade prospects from a fan point of view, because you're not trading anyone most people are familiar with. In Sixto's case, obviously Phillies fans were more familiar with him because he was the top prospect in a farm system without a lot of that's based more on depth rather than a lot of high quality. So I don't know, Liz. I mean, this was probably the most upsetting part of the trade to a lot of people yesterday, not so much Alfaro and more Sixto Sanchez. So what component of losing Sixto upset you the most? Was it that the Phillies were losing their top tradable prospect asset, that they were losing their top prospect at all, or that you really had high hopes for Sixto in the future and saw him in a Phillies uniform, and now that's not going to happen?
I had high hopes for him in the future. I don't look at prospects as tradable assets. That's just not how I think. I know that's what they are. And you're completely right. If the Phillies want to trade for somebody else, they are out of luck. They're kind of out of, you know, tradable assets that they might not need in the future. But yeah, that's mostly what I'm sad about, is that I had a lot of high hopes for him, and I was confident that he could get past whatever elbow issues he was having and be awesome. You know, there was a lot of prospect guys, including Matt Winkleman, who you should read on PhilliesMinorThoughts.com. I believe it's just Phillies Minor Thoughts. He wrote something very lovely yesterday about the trade in Sixto Sanchez. Whenever a prospect gets traded, I feel for Matt, because he, you know, he loves the Phillies like we do, but he puts all of his all of his love and attention on the prospects and watching them and writing about them and talking about them. And when he has to say goodbye, it's for me, it's like saying goodbye to Jorge Alfaro, who I loved more than Sixto Sanchez. For him, it's like saying goodbye to a significant player that you've loved and watched. It's like saying goodbye to, a part of your fandom. I think it's so much, it's a little different with prospects because you put a lot of hopes on them and you project them forward a lot. And it feels like now that they've moved, you're just never going to be able to see and realize that potential. They might realize it themselves, but it won't be in the way that you thought. So, I mean, I was upset about that. I don't know. I anything that makes Derek Jeter happy makes me sad. So that's really what I wanted them to find someone else to give him that wasn't Sixto, so he'd be unhappy. Like, I'd kind of made my peace with Alfaro going because they're getting a catcher. They kind of have to send him. I wanted them to find someone else just so Derek Jeter wouldn't get everything he wanted.
I mean, that guy. Aren't we supposed to be fleecing Derek Jeter? Is he really supposed to be getting one over on the Phillies? Like, I thought it was supposed to go the other way.
That's annoying because both the Yankees and the Brewers managed to get their position players out of the Marlins with, I think, less than they were worth. I mean, I think the Yankees picked up a fair amount of money in the Stanton trade, but they gave up very little besides. I mean, they gave up a handful of dudes, but, you know, I think it was the same with the Yelich trade. Yelich was cheap, if I remember correctly. It wasn't money, it was prospects. And I remember thinking, wow, if that's the price, and then like someone whispered in Jeter's ear, like, you may not want to do that. Maybe you want to hold out for a little bit more so people don't laugh at you. He's like, people were laughing at me? I'm demanding the moon.
Hey man, what you're doing is real dumb. Yeah, so.
I'm not looking forward to next year, by the way. Hall of Fame time for Derek fucking Jeter. I think
one of the most fun pieces of writing I'd done in the past couple of years was realizing I could and deciding to keep track of all of the over-the-top Derek Jeter tongue baths that he received during the final season of his career, because obviously every baseball writer wanted to weigh in with 15 to 30,000 words or so on what a wonderful person and testament to the game Derek Jeter is. And having to go through all of that again, I gotta tell you, that sucks. That makes me hate baseball more than this entire offseason. And that is some strong language. I realize that. But imagine this offseason, and instead of an empty void, like sucking air through like a howling hole like that we've had this offseason, instead of that, there's just middle-aged men taking turns saying how wonderful Derek Jeter is because he could play baseball pretty
play the game
well,
the right
I
way.
Guess, for the New York Yankees. Like, imagine that's been replaced by that, and it's it goes beyond hell on earth to a form of suffering that I don't think humans, they can comprehend it yet. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready. At least there'll be something to talk about, because we'll get to be, make fun of people who love on Derek Jeter, like cats rubbing their faces on a human's leg affectionately. Yeah, that's going to be a rough ride. But at least this offseason has culminated in this deal that happened yesterday. Cause yeah, I'm not heartless. Well, when I say like, I'm not a prospect hugger, even I can recognize the value in Sixto Sanchez and how fun it would have been to see him come up and pitch well as a member of the Phillies pitching staff. Let's say it's the best case scenario. And he comes up and he continues to draw comparisons to Pedro Martinez. I mean, damn, like the Phillies having their own little Pedro Martinez is like obviously a very enjoyable concept. And it just feels like the past couple of years, even as the Phillies have rebuilt and acquired farm pieces by trading away members of their previous core, they've never really jumped into that highest tier of farm system rankings. You know, they've never had the most, they're typically like a number 10 or number 6 on all the farm system, right? They haven't reached like the Padres level of having like 10 guys on the top prospects list. It's usually two or three, and Sixto was typically the headliner. So now we're back to being a pretty middle of the pack, even middler of the middle pack prospect franchise. And, you know, they made the team better on the major league level. We can't forget that. And that's honestly where my focus has been throughout all of this. But it would be nice to just have that component working as well. But, you know, we're just not doing that right now, obviously.
I mean, they graduated a bunch of their prospects, which mm-hmm. is why their ranking has dropped. Like, they moved, like, Hoskins mm-hmm. and Crawford and Alfaro all moved up. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else. Nick Williams moved up. Like, a bunch of dudes moved up. And that is what I think the initial drop of the farm system. And, you know, I always look at prospect, if you're looking at it in this way, and I hate doing it, but prospect capital, I always feel that that is something that you spend when you know your window is open. When your window is open and you've moved players up and you've got, you know, a chance to do something, that's when you start trading your prospects. That's when you start getting rid of them to fill holes. And this, again, was not an obvious hole that needed to be filled. It is Carlos Santana all over again. Mm-hmm. Not in the same exact way, but it feels, you know, in that they, at least they got rid of the guy who was there to begin with, instead of just picking him up and moving him to a different position.
The comparison I used yesterday, I'm kind of curious to see if you agree with this, was the first time Matt Klentak made a deal that reminded me more of Brody Van Wagenen than Matt Klentak. Like, the Phillies had executed a series of deals and signings this offseason that we have said that they hadn't really made one that was upsetting yet. They had made a series of pretty good moves of adding players who they needed, that were filling roles that they were lacking last year. And this was the first deal that I felt was done because there was a good player the Phillies could have. And it doesn't make no sense to make this trade, but it did just seem like it happened because it could happen, not because it necessarily should. You know what I mean? Like, the way that I imagine the Mets kind of like grabbing whatever recognizable talent is within arm's reach and sort of placing it up as this facade year to year. This was a move that felt more like that, where it's like, well, we know we have the players they want in this trade, and we could just do it and not suffer too much. And at least have a reason for it. Like, oh, we jumped from, what did Matt Klentak say yesterday? We just went from like 29th to first in catching. Like, that's a pretty significant upgrade. Like, yeah, you can say that. And it's like, all right, well, you know, that's a pretty good argument to make in this debate. But it just read to me more closer to a deal that the Mets would make right now. I don't know. Does that make any sense to you?
I would agree. It had that odd feeling of a desperation in a way, in that, like, we'd heard nothing and all of a sudden there was a rumor, and then it was like 3 hours of just, you know, getting closer, here are the names, and we're just all in the Slack, like, mm-hmm. weeping, you know, out of, you know, sadness or fear, or, you know, we can't take this suspense.
Well, that was the other thing. Like, they listed a bunch of prospects that could potentially go in this trade, and it wound up being fewer than we thought, right? I mean, they sent three guys. And what, some international slot money or something? Like, you know.
Yeah, they said at one point that they were going to send four, and I just picked up a bullhorn and tried to yell in Philadelphia's general direction. No!
Four? Can you imagine sending four players for JT?
It's one dude. I think two would have been enough, especially with the two of the caliber that they sent. I don't think they should have folded and sent a third. That's something I'm annoyed at. Just on principle. It's one guy for the top prospect and a very promising catcher. How
are you not able to talk Derek Jeter into that? Come on. Now I'm mad.
Like, I said at one point yesterday, I'm like, I have no faith in Matt Klentak's deal making abilities. This deal didn't make me feel that much better about it. And I actually said the words, I would feel more comfortable with Ruben Amaro making
this. Oh my God.
I said that in the Slack. There's evidence of it that the public cannot see, but I'm admitting it here because there's one thing. Like, Ruben Amaro may not have been the best at managing a baseball operations department. I don't necessarily know if he had the skills to run and manage a modern baseball operations department. I think as an assistant GM with the Mets or whatever the hell it is he's doing now, he'll get those skills just a little too late. But he was very good at trades. He was very good at making deals and trades. He had, to me, he had the right amount of ego and confidence in himself to make it work. And I feel like that's an underrated part of deals between GMs. That's why I feel like Brody Van Wagenen is so good at this in a way, because he's like a different Ruben Amaro. He's got like, he's got the confidence and the swagger, the ego that you kind of need as a GM to win. That's what it's about. As a GM, when you're working with other GMs, it is about winning a trade. Whether, you know, they do a little dance and stuff after they're done, if they've fleeced someone, I have no idea. I hope that's true. But, you know, I hate that I don't hate that I think that, because it's true. Ruben Amaro was good at making trades. He had a huge ego and he did not ever want to lose. I feel like that is missing somewhat from the scared turtle without its shell that is Matt Klentak.
Well, I tell you what, this really made me think of the last time. I mean, do you think the last time the Phillies made a trade like this was to acquire Hunter Pence?
Yeah, I think it might have been.
When it felt
because
like...
when was the last time it mattered?
Right. And it felt like, you know, I remember I was going into a movie when that trade was official and like all the prospects they sent to Houston for that deal. I think that was the last time I was like, oh, like, damn it. This was, but every time there's a trade like this, you get over that kind of quickly. I know there's people who are still mad about the Hunter Pence trade. And I think that's, you know,
it was a zillion years ago. Move on. With your life.
That's fine. It's fine. It's okay. But at the same time, you know, those guys never panned out in a way that really hurt the Phillies. But at the time, you know, I was walking into a movie. I'm pretty sure it was Cowboys and Aliens, but I can't be sure. I was walking into a movie with a girl I was dating at the time. We were going to see Cowboys and Aliens, and I was looking at my phone following trade updates. So I was a real catch July 2011. Absolutely. But no, they're the last time they made a trade like this felt like it was then. And you know, that was a, I don't know if it was necessary, but I mean, you know, that was Hunter Pence came in and we all kind of thought he was going to be here for a long time. You know,
he hit like 300 and like appreciably helped the Phillies in the second half. He was a winner. It was a trade that I didn't want at the time, because I remember I was writing for The Good Fight. It's a trade that I didn't want or love. And then like a minute later, I'm like, oh, this is that guy. And then he was goofy and delightful and really good. Mm-hmm.
And they
like, I guess part of it is that like that trade was made in season. And so it took 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like he was traded. Then the next night he was playing. This is going to, it's another month and a half or so before we're actually going to see him on the field. And will he be with Bryce Harper or not? Who knows?
Yeah. That's where this trade winds up being, that like every conclusion you draw is either in one camp or the other, one being this is a deal that is done prior to a Bryce Harper signing, or this is a deal done without a Bryce Harper signing. And it does change it. I mean, we never know the full repercussions of a trade involving young players until years have gone by. So in the meantime, we just get to enjoy having JT Realmuto, which is the way I wind up looking at this. However, yeah, without Bryce Harper, this deal kind of looks like, You're just kind of like doing what you can to make the team better after saying, you know, pretty clearly, if not directly, that you were going to do something else. So, like as usual, even with something happening, we're just kind of left wondering if this is something that is the beginning of something else or just something. And that's kind of the frustrating place this offseason's left us in, regardless of all the Phillies moves. I mean, we said that we had the exact same conversation when they signed Andrew McCutchen. I love this move, assuming it's leading up to another move. So that's, once again, we're just kind of held prisoner by the fact that the Phillies may or may not sign Bryce Harper. I mean, at this point, Liz, you know, we've tried to do podcasts where we don't talk about Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. At this point, we're all kind of just focusing on Bryce Harper. It could be interesting to go back and look at this offseason and see us go round and round on which ones we were talking about more so than the other week to week. But at this point, Liz, let's just look it in the eye. Are the Phillies going to sign Bryce Harper?
I don't know.
You got it. Yes or no? Are the Phillies going to sign Bryce Harper?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't want to. Yeah. I mean, I can't see them not at this point. Like, he could go back to the Nationals, but it would be a huge loss. It doesn't really matter what he does. And I think Klentak has to know that by now. Klentak and McPhail have to know, because there isn't a single baseball writer out there saying, oh, this is enough. You know, not getting one of them is a failure. It's a failure when you are clearly one of the only teams who are interested, one of the only teams willing to spend any significant money. Not getting him is a huge, massive failure that you will just never get over as the GM. With fans, you just won't. Fans will blame him for this forever. The end. I don't care if it's fair or not. That's what it. That's what happens. You know, it's going to have to come out. Like, if it doesn't happen, what were the offers? What does Harper eventually sign for? What weren't the Phillies willing to do? And if it's anything below $350 million, then the question is, why is everybody at the Phillies still employed?
Yeah, no, I totally agree that at this point, yeah, there's just no way it's not a failure without them. And if we have to look back and see this move as something they did to try and act like it wasn't a failure, I mean, we've said it already. It's too late, guys. Like, you got to sign this guy. It's been set up. Yep. Like, no matter whose fault it is, whether it's Middleton's fault, whether it's our fault for making assumptions, it's in there now. It's like that movie in the Loop, I think it was, where it's just like the whole plot happens because there's a rumor that the prime minister is going to be fired. And so now the prime minister has to be fired, or the people who are firing him are going to look stupid. Like, that's the only reason it happens is because everyone assumes it's going to happen. So maybe if we assume hard enough, we can just force the Phillies into a position where they have to do this or they'll look stupid. And I mean, they're in that position now. So good job by us.
Without us, they're in it. Yeah. Like, they have to do it. I think now it's a matter of time waiting for them to either do it or just massively fuck up. Because I'll tell you, I'll be mostly excited to watch the Phillies without Bryce Harper, but it's not going to be appointment television for me anymore. I'm not going to make an outside effort to go visit the stadium. Like, JT Realmuto and Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson are just Gene Segura. Gene Segura, yes. Those guys are not enough to get me there. They're just not. They're not enough to get me or other fans there. We've seen a team that sort of mostly looks like this. You know, we've seen this team. We're looking for the next step. And these guys are like tiny little steps on your way to the next step. But they're not it.
Really?
Just fucking sign
him. I'll say this. This is enough to get me to come to the park. I'm not saying that it's enough to keep me at the park, but this is enough. I wouldn't sit there and be like, the Phillies have done enough to engage my interest for a full season. I would be sitting there like, why didn't this team sign Bryce Harper? God damn it. But
that's the only thing anyone's going to think when they go.
But I don't think it's fair to classify each of these as tiny steps. And I'm not here to stand for the Phillies front office and defend them here. But I will say, acquiring the best catcher in the league, acquiring Gene Segura, those are two really good players that are now in the everyday lineup. When there was a 2-month stretch last year where this lineup had no one it could rely on. And obviously everything we're talking about is just projected, because we don't know if these players are going to be as good as they've been thus far. We have good reason to assume they will. But I mean, imagine like those two hitting every day in a lineup where a couple, even just one or two of the like Rhys Hoskins and Michael Franco, maybe take a half a step or a full step forward developmentally. And Rhys Hoskins isn't as streaky, and Michael Franco is putting up 270, 280. Rather than a month at a time, but like for a couple of months at a time. I mean, that's a pretty good team. Do you think that we feel like assholes if this team doesn't acquire Bryce Harper and then is like really good, like against all odds? Do you think that we?
No, here's the thing. Everyone who has ever commented, written about, or podcasted about baseball has been embarrassed at some point or another. It's just the way it goes. It really is just the way. Everyone, like, we all make assumptions, we all project, we all, you know, say things that are eventually just not going to be correct. And because of that, we're all embarrassed constantly. Like, I'm never going to be, like, unless I, you know, I can't imagine, no, that's not true. I'm sure I've said something incredibly stupid, but you know what? I'm not going to go back and listen for it. I don't even remember. Someone else can tell me something that I should be totally embarrassed about. But even then, I'm just like, so I said it. So I believed it and it's not true. What? Like, I'm now admitting it.
I don't even mean us personally. I mean just we as like part of this giant group of Phillies people who have been advocating for the signing of one of these two free agents, which has pretty much become Bryce Harper at this point. Like, when you think about it as like we the people and then the Phillies as an organization, if they decide not to sign Bryce Harper and then the team winds up being really good for whatever reason, you know, because they've added some good players and let's just say, you know, luck of the draw, enough works out that they are a good team. Do you think they make the claim that it was all part of the plan, that they were just like, you know, we didn't want to spend the money after all, and we thought we had a good enough team as it was, and it turns out we were right? I mean, I wouldn't buy that.
No, and I don't think, I feel like that's something someone says and then immediately regrets it, because that's just not something you would say. I don't think anybody with the team would say something like that, because it's so dumb to say something like that, because you're just going neener to the fans who want to sign Bryce Harper. Like, God forbid we want our team to be
take that back. Fans who that's wanted who to see is. One of the most exciting baseball players on the planet.
Like, this is my issue with modern baseball. The early sabermetric movement has seeped into the brains of so many people and convinced them that what is best for baseball, for the team, is what's also best for their own entertainment. That saving money and building a team through low-cost moves, like the fucking Astros did, is what's best for your entertainment in baseball. And I would like to say that that's stupid. That is so stupid, because you know why I watch baseball? I don't watch baseball to get the satisfaction of watching a team that costs just $150 million and is largely homegrown. I watch baseball to be fucking entertained. I watch baseball to be entertained. And part of that is wanting my team to be the most entertaining team there is. And putting Bryce Harper on it would do it. This team is fine without him. But you know what? Something that they're not is going to be they're just not going to offer an outsized entertainment value. And I want that. I want them to be an insanely fun, really good team. God forbid my team be that way. Once again, they were like that in 2011 when they had 8 zillion good pitchers and like Chase Utley and things were really great. I want that again. Like, I'm never going to apologize for wanting my team to be incredibly good.
Do it. Apologize. Do it.
We should all want, every single person who likes baseball should want their team to be not just the best, but the most entertaining. And that, like, the fact that there are people out there like, no, our team does not want or should not sign Bryce Harper, those people should be forced to turn in their baseball caps.
I like how the caps are what, like, that's your official fandom seal. Like, that's okay. Turn in your hat and your gun, Phillies fans.
Like, everyone is free to like baseball however they want, but the idea that that people should not want their team to be the best through whatever means necessary is baffling to me. It's like people's brains have been poisoned because it's not your money. Advocate for someone to spend it. It's not your money. You're not going to get anything out of your team being on the field, and it costs just $150 million. You don't get anything out of that.
Well, as we enter the home stretch here, there are two more things I want to touch on, two more small things. And Liz, one of them is this that I just saw pop up. We all know the Twitter account Phillies on Facebook, which I believe tweets out real comments on the Phillies Facebook page.
Liz, what are you going to tell me,
Liz,
now?
I thought you would be especially interested in this one because it involves a man who I'm starting to consider your boy in a lot of ways, in the way you stand up for him in basically every conversation. But J.P. Crawford was drafted under Ruben Amaro's watch, says this comment. Jorge Alfaro was acquired by Amaro. Both players, once prospects in Phillies, are now gone in trades made by Matt Klentak. There's an ulterior motive to Klentak's deals, and that is undoing anything and everything Amaro did. Liz, your thoughts.
All right. I don't think that I think ascribing it to ulterior motive is not right. I don't think there's an ulterior motive, but the truth is Crawford was not one of Klentak's guys. He wasn't drafted by his people. And I think there's a correlation. Alfaro is different because they had him at catcher for the whole year and they protected him and kept him down and brought him up right when they thought he was ready or whenever they thought. But I think the getting rid of J.P. Crawford had more to do with the regime change than Alfaro. I really don't think Alfaro being an Amaro guy had anything to do with him getting rid
of him. Liz, I appreciate the thought and insight you gave in response to that comment. I find it
it's more
someone who is implicating Matt Klentak in a clandestine shadow backstabbing operation where he is very personally going in and unraveling all the work Ruben Amaro has done, which is dramatic in a way that Matt Klentak is incapable of being Shakespearean, that he's just walking around Philly's HQ stabbing curtains with a big sword.
As I said, Klentak strikes me as a turtle without a shell. So every time I see him on TV, every now and then he'll give a look at the camera where his eyes are wide and his mouth is like in a little O.
He's thinking.
And he's like, up. And I'm just like, he looks like a defenseless
animal.
Looks
like he's waiting
animal.
For lettuce. Delicious lettuce.
He looks like a little bunny rabbit with no ears, or like I said, a soft, soft turtle. So I ascribing an ulterior motive like that is insane. Do I think that he has less affinity for dudes that he didn't draft?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, that's inevitable. But I love the idea that GMs take their jobs with these very personal vendettas against the guy who last held their job for no reason at all. Like, I love that so much. Do you think they've ever met Ruben Amaro and Matt Klentak?
No, I don't think Amaro has been back, and I would be nice for him to be invited back because he wasn't just a GM, but he was an assistant GM. He was the bat boy. He was a player on
Liz,
the Phillies.
You've advocated for Ruben Amaro to be on the Wall of Fame as we were talking about Wall of Fame inductees. I don't want people to forget that. That was Liz's suggestion, was that Ruben Amaro be voted onto the Hall of Fame. If we're worried about Scott Rolen coming back and being booed, Ruben Amaro, I think he doesn't get booed as automatically as Scott Rolen. I think people just see his name and just instinctively it's booing. You can make the argument, yes, it's not even an argument. You can show the reality of his impact on this franchise, and it's probably a net positive despite some of the giant gaffes that he did. He acquired players that made this team the most watchable and fun team in baseball for a period. He also orchestrated the Ryan Howard contract. So, there are things that are for and against him. But on his way out...
But how much...
On his way out, he acquired a lot of the talent the Phillies are using now to either trade for other talent or use on the field. So...
He made the Cole Hamels trade, which stocked the farm system with an insane amount of talent. That was a fleecing, mm-hmm. I'll say. People are calling this a fleecing, including my very good friend, Michael Bauman. And I don't know if I agree with that wording. I don't know if I agree with the word fleeced. But Ruben Amaro absolutely, 100% fleeced the Rangers, taking a whole bunch of good players from them and sticking them. I think that he was enticed by, the Matt Harrison. They took on, some dead money in, the Matt mm-hmm. Harrison contract or something. But... he did a lot, and this was for a while and still will be, though I have nowhere to write about it anymore. This will be my mission. Like I wrote it in the BP essay last year, Ruben Amaro does not get his due. And that's going to be what I focus, I guess, this part of my Phillies fandom on for the next few years, is trying to get people to remember how good he was before we all turned on him. And the turning on him was the natural closing of the window, because it's not like it was anything that he did specifically. A bunch of players started sucking at once and there was nothing that could be done. That it was the end. He didn't end the Phillies run nature did. The universe ended it. And so I would like people to remember how important he is to the franchise, how instrumental he is in all of that stuff in those 5 years of NL East dominance. He was the AGM for the World Series and then was almost immediately named the general manager. Like, he's incredibly important to this franchise. And I'd like the Phillies and the fans to get to a place where they can recognize that. Because I don't want us to be the type of team that doesn't recognize our history. And I actually have faith that it will happen.
You heard it here first, folks. Liz Rocher will be putting the finishing touches on her Ruben Amaro mural in the days to come. So feel free to stop by her place and check out the tribute to what she calls the greatest general manager who ever lived. As we close out this episode of Continued Success, I wanted to say that yesterday the Phillies said goodbye to a couple of recognizable faces, members of their franchise, in the form of Jorge Alfaro, Sixto Sanchez, and of course, Will Stewart, whose name I do not forget. But also, Nick Rickles retired yesterday. The Iron Pigs catcher, and what was he, like a bullpen catcher? He showed up at spring training with the Phillies. You know, a guy who was not an impact player on the major league level, but definitely one of those really likable fan favorite guys in Lehigh Valley. You know, the yesterday, once he announced his retirement through a series of tweets that was really heartfelt, the Iron Pigs actually responded by tweeting out some videos of some of his highlights, and said they were really going to miss this guy. So they got a clip of him hitting a home run. They got a clip of his last at bat in which he hit this big loopy grounder that wound up being a walk-off single. Last hit of his last bat of his career. That's pretty incredible. Aww. Nobody can say that. And they put out a video of one of his, he came in as a position player as in like a, just a, I guess, garbage time pitching assignment. And it's just, he's got like, technically he's got a delivery, but he's really just sidearming it up there. But it seems like he did pretty well. They called him one of the best pitchers in minor league baseball history when they tweeted that out. But I mean, that's, he talks about his career and like, you know, he got to see all 50 states and he got to play in front of 50,000 fans in the World Baseball Classic in Japan. And, you know, Nick Rickles, we were all familiar with him in Philly circles, just a really likable, funny, just a real guy, you know, just in terms of baseball players, we see, you know, they cross that line into celebrity, and that's, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. It just, you know, it puts you on another planet. And Nick Rickles he's retiring from playing, and he's going to be a coach with the Milwaukee Brewers organization. But just even online and in person, Nick Rickles was always just a really fun, real person, and it seems like he was beloved by all. So I just wanted to mention Nick Rickles, no longer with the Phillies, but definitely a recognizable face in the organization.
Yes. Yeah. Good for Nick. I'm glad he, you know, a lot of guys retire from baseball in the minors because no one will sign them. They'll retire from baseball in the majors because no one will sign them. I like that he was able to end his career on his own terms, and he has a new bright, shiny job with the Milwaukee Brewers, who are set to, you know, if you look at Pecota, the Pecota projections came out just yesterday. The Brewers are, you know, they're going to set the world on fire, it looks like. The Cubs, their projection isn't quite as shiny. So good luck to Nick Rickles. Hopefully there is a playoff coaching assignment in his future.
Indeed. And as always, subscribe, download, and rate all the podcasts that are part of your favorite Good Fight podcast family. Hit in Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk, and Continued Success with myself and Liz. You'll get another episode of this next week. And if you feel like it, throw $5 at the Hit in Season Patreon, because we put out monthly bonus content in there that's exclusive just for our patrons, and it's a lot of fun, and usually it's compliment pieces to The Dirty Inning, so you get another piece of interesting Phillies history, or Liz and I reviewing a terrible baseball movie, or probably a sexy novel this month. So
yes, that's what we're doing this month. Subscribe if you'd like to hear some words about that. Books with titles like Hard and Fast and Sliding Into
You. You're going to hear us talk about that. That is worth $5 to me. And because The Good Fight is everywhere, you should probably order the 2019 Baseball Prospectus Annual on Amazon. I wrote the Phillies essay, and the player descriptions were written by our own Paul Boyer, a very intelligent baseball analyst we happen to have at The Good Fight. And that's that's you just we're inescapable because we are you know, some of the most talented Phillies writers out there, I guess you could not argue with. So because we are inescapable, feel free to order the Baseball Prospectus Annual. It's full of tons of baseball information that, if you're a junkie like we are, is going to fill your brain in this off season in which nothing or very little has occurred. It's definitely, for me, a life preserver as this time of year rolls around and we've gone through another long winter without baseball. So with that being said, thank you for listening to Continued Success, and we will talk to you next week when maybe the Phillies will have even done more things.